Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Game Time. I'm your host and coaching teammate, Shauna Griffiths, and we are back for another conversation with an impactful leader. Today, we are welcoming Eleanor Allen, who has become a dear friend of mine. In fact, I just got back from hanging out with Eleanor and her family out in Colorado, and I came away so filled up and so inspired. I truly did, Eleanor. It was awesome.
Amazing.
To spend time with you.
I feel the same. Shauna, thank you.
Thank you. I know it sounds kind of cheesy, but I truly have been in awe of you since I met you. All the things you've done, the impact you focus on making folks, she has committed her life and her journey and work as well to creating positive impact in this world, doing so now as CEO of World Flourishing Organization and a lot of other things, which we're going to get into. So I just want to start by thanking you so much. Welcome here to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here with you.
Thank you. Thank you. So folks, so Eleanor has been CEO of many different companies. We'll get into that in a minute, including B Corp, Water for People, Steam board member, executive coach, speaker, TEDx, and keynote. She is also an ultra cyclist. You all know my obsession for cycling. We're going to close out the episode talking about cycling. We met through a mutual friend, Nathan Ott.
Yes.
Part of the GC Index, which is a tool that she and I have both used. I would love for you to round us in kind of a snapshot. How did you get to where you're at right now in your journey?
Well, first, another detail we have in common is we're both from Michigan.
Yes.
So being Michiganders, I left Michigan for college. I left pretty much when I was 18. Went to college in Boston and then have lived many, many places around the world. But from Boston, went to Seattle, from Seattle to Puerto Rico. And that was a whole part of my career as an engineer. So I was designing and building water treatment plants all over the world and then grew into running the business. Picking up where you introduced me, I left engineering and went to the nonprofit sector and ran two nonprofits, Water for People and B Lab that certifies B Corps. And had an amazing second chapter of my career, I guess, in the nonprofit space, but really purpose-driven. I became a civil engineer because I was wanting to provide water for public health services, and also was a big environmentalist, so environmental scientist as well. And working in nonprofit, it was always finding purpose. And then moving from Water for People to B-Lab was about finding purpose in a crossover between nonprofit and business, because it's an interesting organization. It's earned revenue and philanthropic revenue. And then moved into my own space. So have two businesses now that I've founded. One, just me, Catapult for Change, my coaching and consulting business. And then the World Flourishing Organization with three other founders doing organizational flourishing. So it's been an interesting journey. So I would say this chapter three. So engineering, nonprofit, and now entrepreneurship.
Awesome. So folks, if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know what to do next, or you know, my life has always been a straight line, there is possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Possibility. And it has so much to do, I think, with your mindset. And I think I was honored to bring you on board as one of the official leadership athletes, so much because of your mindset, very growth mindset, but also this seeing possibility. You're such a game changer. It's positivity, but again, I think it's about the whole thing you talk about a great day. I'd love for you to share that with people so they can have a little bit of context for how you've made it, these jumps to the very different chapters.
Yes, we're all wired a certain way. For some reason, I'm wired to be, I guess, an eternal optimist and the glass half full type. So the great day that Shauna's referencing is we've been preparing to move. So we're going through stuff. And my husband, longtime husband, but also back from high school sweetheart, he finds these old diaries of mine from elementary school. And he's like, hey, let's take a look at these. And for some reason, I was not so interested, but he was. So he starts reading. And so my diary entries, I don't know, fourth, fifth, third grade, something. It's like, dear diary. This, and then it would go, this is what I did. And today was a great day. So then he keeps reading it every day. Today was a great day. He's like, how could every day be a great day? And I thought, when he read the pages, by the way, I remembered those days. I was like, oh, that was a great day. Oh, yeah, that was a great day. So generally, I have great days, and it's just sort of how I'm wired. I haven't had always great days, obviously, and there's been plenty of obstacles in my path and career challenges, but somehow I just pick up the pieces and like, okay, I'm just going to figure it out and find a new path.
Yeah. And I say that because there's so many turbulent times that we've been through, right? And we're going through a massive historic one right now.
Yeah.
And I think that how do we find that ability to make great days, to not just be consumed by all of it? So that's why I just bring it up, is because there is an element of when we decide or we just adopt that we're going to have more great days or not. I truly think there's an element of mind over matter and just truly believing and willing it to be.
It's interesting. I feel like that becomes easier as I get older. And maybe this is part of we get the crystallized mindset as we get older from, I don't know if you've read Strength to Strength, but the whole thing about your brain kind of crystallizes and you're not just fluid, but you can rely on the wisdom that you've learned through your life experiences. And so it's more conscious for me to say, okay, I got to find a new purpose or a new goal. And I am definitely goal oriented. So if something's not working out, okay, I got to change my path. I kind of have a forcing function. I don't dwell and ruminate on woe is me. These are my issues. Like, that didn't work. So find another path, Eleanor. Like, it's up to you to figure this out. So figure out something that gives you that anticipation, that feeling of satisfaction, that feeling of doing something worthwhile and purposeful. And for me, it's a lot about helping others. So finding that way to feel like I'm giving back and paying it forward and just helping others, whether it's through their own professional development or achieving a goal or whatever it may be, that gives me joy. So I look now much more consciously for those things, that I'm more self-aware of. That's how I'm wired. And that's what gives me that sort of feeling of, just joy and purpose.
Yeah. I like the way you mentioned it's a conscious thing, because again, adopting and having a mindset like that and being able to be very agile, she talked about you've moved a lot of places, you've had these mm-hmm. different roles. I do think there is a degree to which it is a conscious choice to show up that way every day. And just as you said, there's plenty of not great days, but you find a way, just as you said. It really made me think of the trio of things that I talk about a lot, is the learning, growing, and evolving. And mm-hmm. that's how I often look at those, get myself through those moments too, is by thinking of it that way. Like, well, can I learn from this, grow from it, and evolve in the process? So I want to make sure that we hit on that a little bit for the audience as they're taking in, the journey that you've been on. And so now you're CEO of World Flourishing Organization. I'd love for you to share, because I've been avidly following on LinkedIn the launch, the study that came out. So fill us in and first actually start with, what is flourishing all about and why does it matter?
This is my favorite topic. Thank you for asking. So flourishing is about living a good life. So Shauna referenced a study a couple of weeks ago, and at the end of April, Harvard, Baylor, and Gallup published a 4-year study of over 200,000 interviews, 20 countries, called the Global Flourishing Study, and basically mapping the human spirit, like what makes people flourish. And their findings show 6 dimensions. So these 6 dimensions are happiness, purpose, health, both mental and physical, character and virtue, human connection, and material and financial security. So if you have those 6 dimensions in balance, or if you have those 6 dimensions, you are flourishing. So you might be financially secure, but maybe you have no purpose, or you don't have good relationships, that you can't be flourishing then. This is their research, right? This is their thesis. You need all these 6 things to live a good life. And that really resonated with me and how I got to be part of this, not part of the study, but applying. So the World Flourishing Organization is partnering with the Global Flourishing Study to take these findings and apply them to the workplace. So the findings are really rich. We want to have tools and models and methodologies to flourish at work, because guess what? We spend most of our days there, and there's a unprecedented level of global disengagement at work. Latest Gallup numbers are like only 20% of workers are engaged. So if they're not engaged, they're either quiet quitting, doing something else. You know, some people are double working, a weird phenomenon happening with remote work, doing two jobs, but not really doing either job fully. And burning out and just not finding satisfaction in what they're doing. So something is clearly out of whack and it's getting worse. Part of it is post-COVID, you know, and then I would say lack of connection with other people. Even me, an introvert, I like being by myself, but you know what? I also like being with people. I really like being with Shauna when she was here. So I do get energy from that. And so we do need that because we are a social creature and species as humans. So finding the way to get these things in your life leads to a flourishing life.
So what does it look like when there's flourishing happening in an organization? How should
that
we
was not part of the study, but okay. I can tell you what okay. it looks like right. yeah. because that's what we work on at the World Flourishing Organization. So we have a portfolio of tools on our platform, going from the most detailed, which is an employee assessment. And that asks employees in four different areas of their work. Lots of questions. I can't remember how many. It takes about 20 minutes, 150 or something. But basically in four quadrants. So set the state of you. How are you? Physical health, mental health, job satisfaction, life satisfaction. Because by the way, if you're not satisfied in life and you're not flourishing in life, you bring it to work. It does come and people get that energy and those, you know, it shows up. So the state of you, the state of your relationship with the others, manager, coworkers, colleagues, commitment, engagement. Do you like them? Do you trust them? Do you want to hang out with them? And then the environment. So the soft work, the culture and the soft work environment, the connectivity, like IT, then also your hard environment, your workspace, whether remote or at the office. And then lastly, the organization itself. Like the strategy, vision, do you understand it? Do you connect with it? Are you part of it? Do you feel like you've influence in shaping the vision and strategy of the organization? Does the leadership have integrity? Do you feel proud to work there? So the corporate, we call those business essentials, whether it's a nonprofit or a government entity or business, whatever the core is. So those four areas, lots of questions, and you get your immediate report card, essentially, your report on your state of flourishing. So those four areas go into 12, which go into 120 drivers of your behavior. And you'll get the report about which areas of the 120 are flourishing, driving to flourish, or struggling. So when you look at this, and I did this, so I'm replaying my own experience. You're like, huh, wow, these things where I'm struggling. My reds, with this red, yellow, green, my reds are like some of these, actually, most of these are in my control. So what's interesting in the workspace is it's not always the management's fault, right? Like we love to blame, oh, management, this, that. No, some things are dual responsibility. So there's immediate acceptance and accountability for feeling like I'm responsible for some of these things that can improve my experience at work. Now, there's also the roll-up that goes to the executive team and you know, they can see like, oh, these are the things we need to work on. But the beauty is it opens that conversation to reduce that mismatch and misalignment between what employees need and desire and what management thinks they need or what they want them to do, which is often where that disengagement happens because like, they don't know me. They don't understand me. I need this. They want me to do this, but I don't want to do that. Or I don't see myself in that strategic goal, whatever it is. So the baseline for the most detailed is that flourishing assessment. And then specifically with the Global Flourishing Study Six Dimensions, we have a mini employee assessment that's flourishing at work. So it's taking those six, applying them to the workplace. It takes less than 5 minutes. So that's like a little pulse survey of flourishing at work. And then the next level up is the organizational flourishing framework. So this doesn't involve employee input. You look at the organization in five pillars. This is sort of like a B Corp assessment, but just for the flourishing, for the employee experience. So it's the foundation there in the organization, policies, procedures, practices. Does the organization listen to the employees? Do they provide learning opportunities? Does it set the bar for achieving as for employees, but also for the organization. You're striving to do better. And then what is the belief and the purpose of the organization and how to impact society and for the greater good? So those five pillars it's a whole pathway we're developing to help organizations flourish at the organizational level. And then last, we have a executive blueprint program for CEOs, C-suite, and board members to learn enough about that flourishing framework to lead and to get an idea of what the blueprint would be for your organization, because it has to start from former CEO speaking here, from the CEO. It can't be another initiative. It has to be something that I'm the CEO. I believe in this. I want my organization to be somehow more in a better place and more flourishing than it is now. I don't know exactly how to do it. It's very hard and subtle and I'm trying all these things, but they're not working. I want to get them to the next level. So I need to lead this. And that's what the blueprint's about, giving the tools, the understanding of the science, and then these micro shifts in leadership behavior to get the macro shifts in the organization.
When you were describing it just, what hit me was that a lot of times people in organizations don't seem to be paying attention to these type of things. And it usually ends up being, well, I don't have time. I'm running the business. So this is where it makes it very clear as I'm listening to you that you actually end up getting help figuring that out. So you don't have to try to figure it out while you're doing, the day-to-day business. And this is what, because clearly it hasn't been done up to now, right? And so it's had this huge gap, to your point, when you talked about the dissatisfaction, the disengagement, all of that that's going on. And I think it's even harder these days with so many generations in the workplace together to try to lead all those different beliefs, behaviors, personalities. So it's sounding to me like this is a real unifying effort. It's work to do it, but you don't have to do it alone anymore.
Yes. Definitely. I think of flourishing as the new engagement, plus culture, plus psychological safety, plus wellness, plus science, and like lifting up to the next level, but combining all these tools that we've been using that aren't giving us the results we want. The other cool thing that I find really compelling as a former CEO of a big organization we can now quantify the return on investment, like as in time back and money back to improve flourishing, meaning reduction in turnover, reduction in absenteeism, productivity, which is measured differently in different organizations. But if people are more engaged, they are more productive. And reduction in healthcare claims. These are real numbers. So one of the things that I making sense to me now that's really compelling is there is an ROI to get to flourishing, but there's a COI, which is the cost of inaction. Continuing the status quo, business as usual, is a decision, and there's a cost of inaction. The COI, it means like you're just going to keep leaving that money on the table.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that cost of inaction, just as well as the ROI. These are things that we can really bring to the forefront. It makes so much sense because I was actually had someone on my show recently, Dylan Gomi, and she was talking about part of what she does is really helping to prove that case of well-being. Mm-hmm. I actually love to see different people trying to make a move in this and trying to make a difference. And my hope to your point is that more people will have bravery to do this within an organization, because I do think when you take on something like that, you have to be willing to examine yourself, the organization, and well, what are you going to do now about what you just found? Because like you're saying, you can either take the action or not, but it's going to have an end result to it.
Exactly. And there's also, I think, a very important prerequisite for getting into the space is if you're going to ask for feedback, you have to be ready to do something. So I call this executive readiness. It's you got to be courageous and vulnerable, but ready to make a change. Because otherwise you get more disengagement because your employees are like, we give you all this feedback and you don't do anything with it, right? So this executive readiness to like, yes, I'm ready to hear more. Give me the gift of feedback, even though it might be really hard, because I want to do something different. And so the organizations were thinking about like, well, what's our target market? It's not the B-plus players who want to get to an A, because that's really hard incremental change. They're already doing a pretty good job. It's not the D players, because they don't care and they don't get it. It's like in the middles, like the average, the C's, C minus is B minus, B plus maybe. Well, not B plus probably, but the ones in the middle are like, okay, we're doing pretty good, but there's something more we can do. And I really want to do something more. And I got to understand better how I can get my organization to be higher performing and get to this peak performance and do better for my employees. That's really the market we're targeting, and definitely those CEOs leading those organizations.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you just said that made me think people probably aren't coming to you to say, we're not flourishing. To your point, it's something's not right. But for people who are listening, if something's not right, you don't exactly have to know the answer for what to do about it. That's why people like Eleanor and the World Flourishing Organization have formed, because literally it is enough to say and then be curious about the solutions. If you say something's not right, I don't have all the answers. Because again, there are other people out there like Eleanor who have made this their life's pursuit. But it's enough to say, I need help. And then get the help that you need. And to your point, it does require you to do something about it, or yes, the engagement will go further down. There are so many times that I was in an organization and had something like that. Well, why are you asking? Because you're not going to do anything about it, folks.
Yes,
it's demoralizing.
I know. It is. And it just, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully, folks, as you're listening to this, this gives a sense of hope and inspiration and things like that, because I think a lot of times we look at all this stuff is going on that's not great and it's bringing people down. But there are a lot of us out there who are still trying. We show up every day to say, okay, well, I'm going to be a part of the change. And I think that's why I wanted you on this show today, and is to be an example of that for people, because we all have a choice how we're going to show up to lead ourselves first and then others.
That is so true.
Yeah. So I do know you and your cycling. And so I want to talk about that a little bit, because I think there's a link to flourishing in that. But before I talk about your own cycling, I would love to talk about Seneca Cycling, the board that I know you're on. I know because you were kind enough to bring me along for the ride, so to say. So tell the audience about Seneca Cycling, please.
Seneca is a women's cycling team that is about 3 years old, right, Shauna?
Yeah.
It's US-based, well, a US 501c3, but based in France. So their home training place is near Toulouse, France, which is a place that both Shauna and I are going to get to. It's an amazing team. So their dream right now is to get to the Olympics in 2028. So they race in the continental races. They have the pro races as well. They want to get to the grand tours. And they've really come an amazing long way in just 3 years. So we've been getting to know the riders and the team. And for me, I'm a cyclist, but I've always been a huge fan of women's cycling and pro cycling, and really following it for many years and really wanting it to be more on the map, you know, that is a sport that we support as sports fans. So when this opportunity came up, I was like, yes, that would be amazing. So I just feel special to be able to support this team, keep them growing, get them into the major leagues of cycling in a way, and help the organization grow to be strong as far as their fundraising, but also their management and governance as a board member, specifically helping this board work really effectively to support the organization. So that's what has motivated me to be part of this Seneca adventure.
Yeah, it is. It is such an adventure. And, you know, it kind of feels like this flourishing of women in sports, mm-hmm. and the women's pro sports movement and everything. And it's so nice to see it. You and I have been athletes our whole lives. We're cyclists as well. So I feel like it's the thing in women's like pro sports that people don't quite know about yet. You know, I do think that doing things like cycling, doing things like being on a board that you really like, you know, giving of yourself, that giving first leadership, I think those can be elements where you know, we're taking it upon ourselves to figure out how are we sort of filling the gaps in those pillars that you talked about, in those, you know, in those six areas that you're talking about. You know, it's that's why I think both of us are being a part of the Seneca adventure. So with that, your own cycling, you are amazing. I know you have a big race around Denmark coming up very soon. And but ultra cycling, help the audience know what that is. Oh, besides crazy.
Besides crazy. So it's a very niche thing. So there is a reason why many people don't know about it, because it's tough. It's just one of these crazy things I got involved in. In another very serendipitous way, as life goes, like Seneca was, I met the manager of Seneca through a friend, through many stages of connections removed. So the ultra cycling, I've always loved cycling ever since I was a kid. But, you know, dabbler, like here in Colorado, lots of rides, nothing racing, although I like Zwift races. The ultra cycling came out of my life because when I was CEO of Water for People, a lot of fundraisers, and one of the corporate partners we had, four guys are like, we're going to do a fundraiser for Water for People. We're going to do the Race Across America. I was like, huh, what's that? So I started reading about the Race Across America. Well, it is the premier ultra cycling event, which no one's ever heard of unless you are an ultra cyclist. And so the guy who started it, that put together the team, he saw Race Across America as a kid on the like Wild World of Sports when it existed back in the day. So basically, it's this crazy relay, 7 days across the U.S. So these four guys did it in 2017. And I watched, I was like obsessed, like watching their dad, waking up every day, seeing where they were, sending them messages on Facebook and Twitter and everything. And it's like, oh my gosh, who are these? I didn't know them. Who are these crazy four guys doing this for Water for People? And just like fascinated. So a year goes by and two of the guys are like, you know, if we did that race again, we'd be so much better. It's very complicated. Lots of logistics. Four riders. You could be one. Those are the total crazies. Two, very crazy. Four, moderate crazy. Eight, you know, it's a pretty sweet ride. So the team of four, it was hard. They're a bunch of engineers. They're like, we could do this better if we did it again. So they planned to do the race 2 years later. Two guys are like, no way in hell am I doing that again. That was awful, miserable. And these races are very mental. For those who do ultra or like long endurance sports, it all becomes a mental game, right? Like, I can't go another mile. Oh, I only have 3,000 more to go. Okay, one more down. And you can't think about anything else besides like the next minute of your life when you're screaming in agony and the lactate acid is tearing up your thighs. Now, for me, so anyway, I got invited to join the team for this, the repeat, because two guys wouldn't do it. And then the CEO of the company was a friend of mine. It's like, look, we know you like to ride your bike and it'd be really cool if, would you race? And I was like, no. And he said, well, it'd be really cool if you were on the team because we could raise a lot more money for you. Well, of course, super compelling. I was like, okay, I'm in. So I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. And I tell my husband, I just signed up to do this Race Across America. And he's like, what? He's the researcher in the family, right? So an hour later, he's like, No. You don't understand. I was like, I think I do. I watched their dot. You know, I got it. He's like, no, this is like you train for a whole year. You can't do that. You travel all the time and you're going to all these places. At that time, it was like places with no gyms, like Africa and India and Latin America. He's like, there's no way you can be prepared for this race. So of course, the more he told me, there's just no way. I was like, I'm definitely doing this race. So of course, I did the race and he was on the crew and it was hard, super hard, but it was super amazing. Like it was a supported team, 12 crew, four riders, just everything went as well as it could. Life bonding with this team, which led to, of course, more ultra cycling. So then we did the race across the West. The two of us, David and I, did that, and it was the summer of the heat dome of 120 degrees in Arizona, California. Half did not finish, including us. But again, it was a fundraiser ride. The first Race Across America was, Race Across the West was for Water for People. And it was like, I've never been so hot. It was like riding in a blow dryer. Everything is the desert in your mouth.
Sounds horrible.
Cooling vest. I mean, it was horrible. Like the pavement was, asphalt was 180 degrees. It was just like the most miserable cycling conditions. In the middle of Monument Valley, we're like, the hell are we doing out here? It's like no shoulder, like let's wheels up to Durango. We just did not finish after 2/3. A lot of people were like in the hospital, dehydrated. A couple teams got hit by cars. Like, no, we're doing a charity ride. We're not doing that. So, and then through all this, I meet this other friend in this little world. And he's like, hey, you know, I heard you do this ultrasight thing. I'm like, oh yeah, I did a couple. He's like, me too. What'd you do? And then, you know, you quickly compare. We're like, okay. So the four person team is the best. The two was miserable. That was the one we did not finish. Four person team is the best. He's like, I really want to do one of these races, you know, somewhere else. I'm like, okay. This is my friend, Jonathan. He gets in his mind. He wants to do this race around Denmark. So the first time he calls me, I'm like, oh, I can't do it. Then my son's graduating from high school. Sorry. And I'm kind of like, no way I'm going to Denmark. But he's persistent. So here we are, 2025. Race around Denmark is the 28th of this month, May. And we got a team of four, a crew of six. We're doing it.
Amazing. It's amazing. So wait, the race across America, how many miles it was that?
3,000.
Just to try to give context, 3,000 folks in seven days, which is a lot. We're both laughing, folks, if you hear us or watching us, because we both know how brutal this is, but yet you do it again. But part of it.
One of these insanity things.
It's insanity, but the way I talk about it a lot is proving yourself to yourself in a new way every time. Yeah. And not in a, I'm no good, I have to show myself I'm worth anything, but it's literally like, well, I can do hard things. And, you know, I did a workout on my bike recently and I got through the first really hard sprint part and I was like, okay, I really don't think I'm going to be able to do 8 more of those. But then I was like, okay, I got through the first one. And then I got to the second one and you prove yourself to yourself. But I started also looking at, like, I looked at my leg, it's a sensation. It doesn't have to be pain. So again, these are mind tricks. It gets very mental. I find so many parallels to on the bike, off the bike. And I feel like the more I'm able to do that practice on the bike, I'm able to translate it to work. So sometimes if something is really painful experience at work, does it have to be that painful in that moment? You have to experience all those things in that moment, or can you distance yourself a little bit from it and sort of, it's a sensation, it's a moment, that kind of thing. So I'm curious, is there an element of cycling that you can talk about as far as being a part of your equation, your personal equation for flourishing?
I mean, I think getting to know these six dimensions, which again is new because this study just came out in April, but I really like the six dimensions of flourishing. So to me, I would equate, I mean, there are two parts, I guess the physical health part is one. Okay. Three, happiness, I would say. Okay. Mental health, that's three. And then, purpose. I would definitely put purpose. Actually, human connections there too. And the purpose in this is just setting a goal and getting there. And I think that's a lot also about work. And then you break your big goal, like, okay, race around Denmark. Well, that's a big goal. Okay. That means it's 1,000 miles. I got to do 250. Okay. That means I'm going to do 6 shifts of 6 hours, 15-minute sprints with my partner. Okay. That means for this little, I've got to ride for 15 minutes. And then when you get on the bike, you're like, okay, that 15 minutes sounds like an eternity. I got to ride to that tree. I got to ride to that hill. And then you're looking. And then for me, it's like, where's the van? I got to get to the van. And, you know, my husband was on the crew. He wore a blinking strobe light. So I called him Blinky. But that blinking strobe light headlamp, you can see really far. So by the end, this is in Race Across America. By like the last 3 days, all I was like, where's Blinky? Where's Blinky? Where's Blinky? I can ride to Blinky. As soon as I see Blinky, I can get there. So for work, it's like setting a goal. Okay, break it down, little goals. I can do that. Okay, that feels good. Well, I can do another little one. I can ride to the next Blinky. And then, oh my gosh, we were in Minneapolis.
Yeah. I thank you so much for saying that. And I like these examples because we can talk in theory about the way things could be, should be in work and life, that kind of thing. So it's just really helpful to find different people such as yourself. You're doing so many things and you're talking through with us, like, how do you do those things? And it's both by the physically and mentally committing, doing it, learning, growing while you're doing it. And along the way, finding the pieces that help you get through it, you know, and a lot of times those things are internal and external, you know, you have to look for Blinky. But I think it all boils down to drawing it back to what you're doing with flourishing and things like that. We have choice, but we also have action, and it starts within and then it carries within. And so as we're closing out this episode, I encourage people to really think about how you can be a pivotal piece of creating more flourishing within yourself, and then finding the courage to do that within your organization and tapping into these new global resources. You know, is part of that whole, equation journey type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So to close us out here, Eleanor, I would love for you to, let us know, what do you hope people take away from this episode?
I hope people take away what it means to flourish. There are these six dimensions, and having those, knowing what they are, you can design your life to find those six dimensions. So that's the health and happiness, the human connection, the purpose, living with good character and virtue, and material and financial security. So that's one takeaway, I would say. And in thinking about the goal setting and the sports and the leadership athlete aspect, being active, especially as we age, I'm getting to the older part of life. What my husband and I are like, what do we want to be when we're 90? I want to be able to, you know, ideally ride my bike, if not walk around the block. I want to be active. And that keeps us alive and flourishing as well. For me, it's really important to have these sports in my life to be able to have those goals and to also have that interwoven with what I do. And that's what makes me flourish. Hopefully that'll be helpful for others too.
Absolutely. And as you said that, it's a nice way to end is to say, folks, like, I really encourage you, and I'm going to do it. Write down, think about, what does it take for you to flourish and how can you contribute to that? And it starts within first. So do it for yourself first, yes. And then you can bring it to others.
Yes. And then a little trailer to that, I would say, David and I were speaking yesterday about all these things are within us. Like, we are our biggest impediment, but also our biggest lever to get us to where we want to be, you know, cutting down the chatter in your head, whatever the negativity is, there's a lot within us. So our little tagline from yesterday was, you are the new blue. So the blue zone is within you. You can create your own blue, and that gives you, you know, happiness and purpose and longevity. So that was sort of fun too. It goes with this whole flourishing thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Well, Eleanor, thank you so much for joining us today, for sharing and raising our awareness and inspiring us. So everybody have an amazing day. And here's to all of us flourishing more and suffering less.
Thank you, Shawna. I appreciate being on the show. Thank you.